are dreams. If you want to get technical about it, dreams are a collection of involuntary thoughts, visual images, and emotional responses that occur during sleep. Once thought to occur only during the REM stage of sleep, dreams are now known to take place during the three non-REM phases of sleep as well. And really, we've only been investigating this world since the 1950s. And I've talked many times and interviewed many people that have had really incredible experiences while dreaming. And that's what my guest talks about this week. Elizabeth Corpian tells a story that is astounding. And I'm not sure how many of you have had this experience where you've woken up or you feel like you've woken up and you have a vision or you have an experience that is so real and so profound that there is absolutely no question in your mind that it's actually happened. Now, there are scientists that say that dreams are only our attempt to rationalize the world, wrestle with problems, figure things out that happen in our daily lives. But there are other people that believe that dreams are a gateway to other realities. And you'll know if you've listened to any of the interviews I've had with others on this podcast that many people have received messages in dreams, have discovered events that are going to happen in the future, in that liminal space, even have been told how to deal with a problem in their daily lives. So really, there's something going on that we just don't understand yet. Marsha Norman says that dreams are illustrations from the book your soul is writing about you. And let's think about that. What if dreams are in fact your heart trying to give you a message or connect you to the world or others in a more authentic way? Maybe dreams are the only way our souls can speak to us. I know I've had dreams that have been so real and so profound that they've changed my life. And so with that in mind, here's episode 163 of Bite-Sized Blessings.
We were sleeping, everything was fine. And I just remember, I don't know what time it was, but at one point I opened my eyes and at the foot of the bed my husband and I were sleeping in, there was an older man. He was wearing sunglasses, had a big white mustache, white hair. He was in like some sort of like little top, you know, like some like t-shirt and then some swimsuit trunks. And then next to him was a younger man, probably about 18, 19 years old, taller, really slender, thin. We're also wearing sunglasses, wearing a ball cap. I saw them clear as day at the foot of our bed.
How do you self-describe, like, if you were to go to a party or an event and you have to kind of introduce yourself or tell people who you are, how do you do that? Like, what kind of human are you?
Jeez. What kind of human am I? Like, all right, let's get into existential stuff. I mean, I guess I would just kind of describe myself as, you know, a person that is just super friendly, just wants to hear everybody out, just wants to be active in everyone's lives, share the love, share the grace. And also, you know, because of my career now that I do like mental health treatment, I want to be like that safe space for people. And I do find myself because one is because it is my career, but two, I think it's just this presence that I give off to people that I feel like a lot of people just feel comfortable talking about the hard things with me. And I'm comfortable being there to talk through the hard things. And so I think that's kind of me in a nutshell. And it's something I'm really happy to be that kind of person.
And I'd also love to just say that you are the second ginger I've interviewed today. So it's a day of gingers, and I love that.
I wanted to just mention that you used to be in the hospitality industry for a long time. And, you know, over the years, I got to hear, you know, kind of your experiences or what you were going through. And I feel like even that field, like what you were doing was already mental health. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I purposely went into hospitality originally because I knew I always wanted to help people. I thought about going into nursing and I was like, I don't know if I could deal with all of like the other stuff, bodily fluids, things like that. And so I thought hospitality was the next best thing. And so like, I was like, let me do things to help people. And so I've worked in hotels, restaurants, catering, events. And at any time I'm doing something to make somebody's day a little bit brighter. And so definitely, it really went right into the mental health field. You know, there's times where I'd be like a bartender and I was like hearing people like talking about their lives, especially when I worked in an airport hotel. I'd just sit there and I'd entertain people that are just on travel that don't have other people to talk to. And then, you know, especially like I lost my job in 2020 due to COVID-19. I was doing catering and events at that time. And I did eventually take a job back in restaurants in the middle of the pandemic to help out with, you know, money and stuff. And of course that was when people were like at their worst, you know, people were just grumpy, devastated. We really like weren't around each other anymore. And so we kind of just lost this human decency. And so I was able to like learn these skills working with these people, of de-escalation and just like letting people recognize, like, I know you're grumpy. I hear that you're grumpy. Do I think you're valid for being grumpy? Maybe not, but I'm here to like make you feel heard. And like, that just like came right into mental health. You know, I was able to de-escalate people from being like so upset and so angry and like bring them down to like being into like a safe space and just being able to like be themselves. Cause coming out of the pandemic, all of us, we're a little messed up, honestly. I mean, and of course, that's why I went into the field that I'm in now, which of course, you know, am I capitalizing on global trauma? Maybe, but also it's something that is so much more needed these days. And so it just, those skills just really were able to move right into my new career. And I'm just so happy that I had that background and like had to learn the people skills to be able to have the surface level people skills and translate into like the deeper level people skills.
If you don't want to say, I'm just so curious, what was one of the most interesting stories when you were bartending that you heard from someone?
Oh my gosh. I still remember this vividly and I might tear up telling this story. I still just remember this one time I was serving, I wasn't bartending, but I was still serving while I was in Seattle. And, there was just like this, like there's these two ladies and they were just sitting and they just like seemed sad and somber while they're eating. And like, you know, I'm such a bubbly personality regularly. And I was like, I need to kind of like, you know, level my, what I'm doing right now. And so I was able to just be like, you know, I hope you ladies don't mind me asking, but like, are you guys doing okay? And they just broke down in tears and they were saying, we're from out of town. Our mom lives here and she is not doing well health-wise. And earlier today, she actually lost consciousness and there were sisters and she was like, and like one of the sisters had to like revive their mother, like with CPR. And like, she was able to be okay. She was stable. And so they had like they were staying at the hotel, right? And they had just gotten back from the hospital, hadn't eaten all day. They just wanted to like sit there, eat and like go to bed that night. And you know, they were just sobbing. And I like felt like so like moved that first of all, they were able to tell me this and that, you know, gosh, like such a hard thing that they were going through. And so they finished up their meal. Everything was fine. You know, I sat and chatted with them for a bit, just like talking about their background. And then we would do these little hospitality packages where we'd send like, you know, like little snacks or wine or chocolate or something to the room if we wanted to. And so I was like, these ladies need a little extra something. And so I sent them something and I like hand wrote a note and just said like, thank you ladies so much for coming in. I'm so sorry what you're going through. But all of us here at the hotel, we're here for you, whatever you need. And the next night I'm serving again in the restaurant and the ladies run into the restaurant crying. And they said, thank you so much. You were the one like shining thing that we've dealt with all week. Our mother's doing better. And they were crying and I hugged them. We had a huge like group hug. I'm sobbing with them. And they're just like, we just needed so much love and support right now. And you really provided that for us. And we're just so thankful for you. Our mother's leaving the hospital today. So we're going to be going back home, but thank you so much. So I'm just still sobbing. I was literally in the middle of taking an order for another table. And I like ignored them. I like came back. I was like, I'm sorry. Like, what can I get you? And they're like, do you need a minute? I was like, yeah, I'll just send somebody else to get your order. Hold on. And I like went back to the kitchen and cried a little bit more for a bit, but it just, you know, it just made me feel so good because like you said, I mean, it's like I was providing a home away from home for these people in their absolute darkest day.
And I do think, you know, I talk a lot about just in my daily life with whoever I'm talking to about, it's from the Catholic Church, charisms. And a charism is, you know, like a gift that the gods have bestowed upon every human has a charism, and it's part of our job to figure out like what exactly is that gift so that we can make the world a better place. And I would suggest that you kind of, you're living into yours, you know,
yeah.
And you have been living into it. And I think that's such a beautiful thing. I love that. Now I have known you for a few years, but I don't know the answer to this next question, which is, did you grow up in a religious household? Like, what did that look like for your family?
Yeah. So, you know, my parents were both raised Christian Catholic. My father was actually confirmed Catholic. My dad's actually originally from Cuba. And then my mom is a nice, you know, mutt of the whites, you know, Irish, Scottish, all of that kind of stuff mixed in there. But so because of the Irish and then the Cubanists, that's where, you know, the Catholicism comes in. So we did grow up, you know, practicing Catholicism. You know, we went to Sunday church, you know, we went to like the Sunday school or what I think we called it like CCD or something like that. And then when we all got to about, I think it was like 12 years old, then that was when our parents were like, you know, make your own decision. If this is your faith, go ahead and follow it or whatever you want to do. And so When I got to that age, I decided to take a step away from the church. You know, it was something I just didn't really feel like I didn't need any kind of guidance from anything else or from a community to tell me to be a good, gracious person. And so since then I've really kind of stirred away from like, you know, organized religion. Really my religion these days is more like connection with the earth and spirituality and stuff like that. You know, like, it's a joke, but like, you know, camping is like my church, hiking is my church. Ways that I can just feel more connected to the earth is really more my spirituality. However, you know, there's still some agnosticism there for me too, you know, especially growing up Catholic is we don't, you know, if evidence is presented in front of me, I'm going to accept it. but until then, you know, I'm just going to continue just practicing being just the good person, just like what I was taught.
Yeah. I have interviewed a lot of people and where nature is their cathedral, the place where they go to reconnect or just connect at all. And I just always have always loved that idea of forest bathing that the Japanese do, where you go and you stand in a grove of trees and you just bathe in the ions and like the vibrations from the trees and you breathe deeply and you kind of have this communion. And I did it many times when I lived in Portland. There's trees all over the place. And I swear to God, each and every time I felt 10,000 times different when I emerged from those trees than when I went in. There's just something really interesting and palpable walking into a wooded area or a wooded space that's really silent. It seems like there's nothing around, but there's also the feeling of being held. I don't know if you have ever experienced that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. For me, there's definitely been like some of my most spiritual experiences has been like in the quiet, calm, feeling the breeze, like taking my shoes off and feeling the earth with my actual bare feet. Sometimes even sitting on the ground and like breaking up like the dirt with my fingers, you know, just those are the ways to like feel like connected. And yeah, I mean, that's why like I'm surrounded by plants in my house. I'm constantly needing more. But you know, if I ever feel like I'm like, you know, I need a moment of like grounding or things are too stressed out. Yeah, I'm one of those people. I even preach like literally hugging trees, which I know is like such a joking thing. Oh, you hippie tree hugger. And it's like, no, like feeling the spirit of the tree, feeling the spirit of something that has been here before you were around and will be here after you're gone. Like it just makes me just feel so gracious. I still remember one time going to a bar and like, I saw like this girl just sitting alone at a bar and I'd had a couple drinks and I was like, let me go talk to her and see how she's doing. And the first thing she tells me is she's like, do you believe in ghosts? And we sat and talked for 45 minutes. And I was like, that was the best icebreaker from a stranger I've ever heard of. Because, and she was like, exactly. It's what I do every single time. And I'm like, so I do it now too. When I'm trying to get to know somebody, I like instantly, I'm like ghost stories, because I have such a crazy personal story for my own self. So like growing up, I did feel like I was like a little more sensitive to some things, you know. I don't know if it was just, you know, being like a scared kid or like what was going on, but I did feel like a little bit more sensitive. Like I felt like there was definitely times where I felt like connections with spirits, or like I would be afraid that I wasn't alone when I wasn't in a space that I should have been alone. And I do like remember, yeah, just like a couple of times as like, you know, a kid, early teens, like just kind of having like some weird like dreams or anything like that, that was connected with that kind of stuff. So I think it was like 6 or 7 years ago. I was actually on a vacation. It was a destination wedding, in California that I went and I attended. And, we partied it up. We like went to a bunch of different stops in California, made a whole trip out of it. The wedding was at like in Catalina Island, which was gorgeous. Everything was great the whole time. We definitely overindulged in alcohol and stuff like that. And so on our last night of the trip, I'm pretty sure, or the second to last night of the trip, we were all like, we need to detox. Let's all abstain from alcohol for the day. Let's just like have a good dinner and like go to bed. And we were staying at like a pretty nice, branded hotel on, I believe it was Huntington Beach. And at that time, just to like save a little bit of money, my ex-husband and I were sharing a room with our other best friends, that a couple, man and wife. And so we went to bed at a good time. We were sober, like we didn't drink at all. And we were sleeping, everything was fine. And I just remember, I don't know what time it was, but at one point I opened my eyes. And at the foot of the bed my husband and I were sleeping in, there was an older man. He was wearing sunglasses, had a big white mustache, white hair. He was in like some sort of like little top, you know, like some like t-shirt and then some swimsuit trunks. And then next to him was a younger man, probably about 18, 19 years old, taller, really slender, thin. We're also wearing sunglasses, wearing a ball cap, and wore a branded t-shirt. I can't remember right now if it was Adidas or Nike, but it was one of the two, and then also swim trunks. I saw them clear as day at the foot of our bed. And I, of course, panicked because I saw them so clearly. I had pulled the sheets over my head and was like just frozen in shock for what felt like probably like 20 minutes, but it was probably, you know, like 10 seconds. And I finally, after like was frozen, I like bumped, you know, my husband at the time, I like bumped him. I was like, Trevor, wake up. And he's like, what? And I was like, there is a ghost at the foot of our bed. And he's just like, Liz, you're no, no, there's not. And I was like, Trevor, there's a ghost at the foot of our bed. He paid and he was like, there's nothing there. But he remembers how like frozen in terror I was. He was like, are you going to be okay? I was like, I don't know. Like, and we're trying to be quiet, obviously, because we don't want to wake up our friends who are in the bed right next to us. But I was like panicking. Like, I was like, I wanted to turn on the lights. I didn't think I could sleep anymore. Cause I'm like, I saw them clear as an actual like set of people in front of me. And so I don't know how long it took. Like, I had to like let my body like get out of this like rigor. And I was able to relax again and I fell back asleep. And as I was sleeping, I was dreaming of them. And as I was dreaming of them, I learned their names. Their names were Kyle was the child, and I cannot remember the other man's name. I learned they were a father and son pair. I learned that they were out deep sea fishing off of the coast of Huntington Beach and were lost. and they wanted somebody to contact their wife slash mother to let them to let her know that they were lost. And I remember waking up the next morning, I was like, what the hell? Like, did I just like have an experience of being like a medium? Was I just making up details in my mind? But I was like, why do I have these details out of nowhere? Like, why would I just develop these details about them and still that next morning have this clear vision of who they were? And so like, I just like felt horrible. So I'm like, first of all, like, I'm like, cause the way they were standing in front of the bed, it almost looked like a photograph. So I'm like running down the hallways of like the hotel, like seeing if there's like a photograph that matched these people to see, like, maybe I'm just making stuff up, because they didn't look like anyone I've ever met in my life. I did not recognize them as actual people. And so then we're at breakfast the next morning and I'm asking, I was just like, hey, has anyone ever reported seeing ghosts in this hotel? And it was a newer hotel. It was like only like a 3 or 5 year old hotel, like a really nice, like kind of resort that we were staying at. And they're just like, no, this is, you know, we don't deal with ghosts. We don't hear ghost stories. Nobody's ever reported anything like that. And I was like, and so like the whole rest of the trip and even coming back to New Mexico, I'm like freaking out. Like, I'm kind of just like, they were reaching out to me to like, to deliver this message. And I have no idea how to connect with this mother. And I remember like coming back, and even though I didn't have a last name, I remember I was like, just like constantly Googling for like weeks after I got back, trying to Google about like somebody's missing, lost at sea outside of Huntington Beach, California around this time. Like, I kept searching it because I knew it had to have been recently because of the way they were dressed. They were dressed completely as modern times. They were, and like the fact that I had all of those, you know, those details given to me. And so, you know, sadly, I ended up having to give up the search because I just didn't have enough details. I didn't have a last name. I don't know what was going on, but it just, it still like, just like boggles my mind how detailed I could see them. And that's what makes me truly, truly believe I did see ghosts, and I truly believe they were trying to communicate.
What's really fascinating, because I also listened to this, I think you would love this podcast. Have you heard of it, called Spooked?
Mm-mm.
It's an offshoot of the Moth Radio Hour from NPR. And oh, okay. It's just all stories of people calling in and telling about their ghost stories, their ghost experiences. Oh, yeah. And in that show, I mean, over and over again, people see figures at the end of their bed. You know, they were wearing modern clothing in what you saw. But I think, you know, that period between being sleep and awake, and I've said that before, it's this like liminal space, but also being, you know, in the REM sleep cycle, like, I feel like you're just more open. And so I think you probably are a medium, because I do think to do your job well as a therapist, as a bartender who listens deeply, as someone who can sense or hear what's not being said, because I think that's really important. A lot of people, they'll tell their stories, but they don't tell you everything. And sometimes you have to practice a lot of deep listening and discernment to kind of maybe hear what's not being said, because there's probably a lot that's not being said. You kind of have to be a medium, you know, you have to have these deeper senses. You know, I know as a therapist, probably you're like, I'm not going to use my intuition, because you really want to get to know your client and like have an extended conversation so that your client can get to the truth of what's going on or suss out the trauma or whatever's going on. But I think part of the reason you're probably so skilled at doing this and have been your whole life is because you are sensitive, because you said that at the beginning of the interview, you're sensitive. And I wouldn't be surprised if you have some mediumistic skills and abilities, which makes you excel at what you do now. I don't know if that scares you or not.
It's just so funny to connect it that way, because you're absolutely right. There are so many times in my work as a therapist where I'm like, you're not telling me something, or like, I practice like what I preach, and I try to be as genuine as possible with my clients. Like, there'll be times where I'll be sitting in a session and they'll like tell me something. I'm like, I'll straight up tell them. I'm like, I'm calling bullshit on that. Tell me more. You're not telling me the whole story. Like, are you sure that this isn't a thing? And then they're just like, damn it, yes. I'm like, okay, thanks for finally telling me. And it really, really came in handy. Last year, I was actually strictly doing mental health therapy with children, And I was having clients as young as 3 and as old as, I think, 8. And, you know, especially when it comes to doing play therapy with children, the whole thing is like children are so afraid of their trauma that they can't face it head on. That's why they don't have the words or the communication skills to actually communicate it. So they communicate it through the act of play. And the way that trauma can actually come out in children's play therapy is they tell it through stories so that they don't have to believe that it's a real thing. And so I had to practice those intuitive skills with my children to be able to understand what their trauma is, be able to understand what they're trying to communicate with me. Because a child could pick up a toy and do a certain thing with a toy, and I could instantly be like, oh my gosh, so at grandma's house the other day, she broke a glass and it scared you and you thought you were going to get hit. And like, I would like talk to the parents afterwards. I was just like, hey, did an incident happen at grandma's house last week? And they'd be like, what are you talking about? Did they tell you that? I was like, this is what they did with the toy. So that was what I was leading to. And she's like, that's exactly what happened. Yes. And so it is interesting. You know, I always thought that I was like good at it because like I just picked up on skills, but it's like, obviously I picked up on something, which means I might have, I mean, I do believe like I do a lot of studying of like Carl Jung. He is, you know, like he has a lot of amazing theories of like collective unconsciousness. And I totally 100% believe in that kind of stuff. And so I believe that that part does help me to be intuitive with people because we do have this connection, like a connection in our unconscious. And it just like provides me with the space to be able to do so much more work with them. And so, yeah, so it is fascinating to like have you make that connection, because of course I didn't make that connection, but it is so true. And it really is such a big strength that I have that gives me so much more for me to do my work.
It's like a superpower.
It's a superpower. It is. It is totally a superpower.
I love that. Well, I am so intrigued and sort of just thrilled that your icebreaker is also this ghost question, because I find that so fun. It's so fun. You might have actually just changed my life a little bit. And so I am very intrigued that when you've used this question as an icebreaker, what is like one of the craziest stories you've ever heard from someone about a ghost with this question?
Oh my goodness. So, I mean, I haven't used it too much because like, obviously I don't use it in my work with my clients. However, I have had a couple of clients be able to tell me some ghost stories lately. But it is something like, I had dinner with a friend a couple of months ago, and we had already been like talking like for a few days. And I remember like finally being like, what do you think of ghosts? And so like, that's usually like how I broach the subject. Like, do you have any ghost stories? But more like, what do you think of ghosts? Because like this girl who shared this as an icebreaker with me, she's like, people always are very passionate on either side of the spectrum of ghosts absolutely do not exist. Like, you're ridiculous if you believe in them and blah, 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 blah. And they'll go off, which gives you an opportunity to have more of a conversation. But then on the other side, yeah, people will tell it. And so I don't remember the full details, but I definitely remember like sitting and listening to it as my friend was telling me about this. And he was saying about how he had a girlfriend in high school that whenever he would go to her house, like lights would flicker and do weird stuff, or they'd come in, furniture was rearranged all the time. And I guess like it finally got to a point where it was like so bad that she could not go home. She felt like it was like following her when she was at home. Like things would like get like things would fall off the wall as she'd like walk by or things like that. And like, yeah, lights would just like randomly turn off when she'd like walk next to him. And oh yeah, he was telling me about some of these details. And I was like, oh God, I was like, you know, I didn't want to tell him and be like, oh God, was she cursed? But I was like, it's not like he's dating her anymore, but it was still just like, that sounds really scary. Going into that house, he's like, yeah, I'd stop going into that house. I actually, oh my gosh, I heard a story recently where somebody witnessed a ghost walk by and the ghost rushed that person's child's foot and that child developed a foot infection. So that was wild to me to hear. I was like, what? And so, yeah, it's there's just some wild stuff out there. And, you know, I hear like a lot of little things and like, you know, like doors rattling or, you know, I swore I closed that cabinet, but then it's not closed. And it's like, especially being somebody who works in trauma, you know, it's like, oh, or does that really happen? Or is it like dissociation and you forgot that you did open it or you forgot to close it? But then there's like things like that, like the foot infection or like lights constantly turning off and like somebody witnessing them turn off or things move when they're walking by. That's when it's like, there's some evidence there of something else going on.
One of the most intriguing stories that I heard on Spook that I thought was really fascinating was in this hospital, and it's told, the nurse is telling this story about all of this stuff that's going on. And she had a couple patients in, I mean, she had a lot of patients. There were a lot of patients in this hospital, but this story deals with two people, two different patients. And you know, I mean, nobody believes in this stuff. Nobody started off the day believing in anything. But this woman comes in, redhead. I wonder if that means something. And is, yeah, and is in the hospital. And I forget why she was in the hospital, but she's in the room. She's in the room for several days. And, you know, the nurse gets to know her and stuff. And the woman slowly divulges that, you know, she's kind of sensitive and a psychic and whatever. And she is like, do you know what's next door? And the nurse was like, oh, it's just, you know, the morgue. Like, it's like the morgue is down below, but there's like a hallway and a stairway to get to the morgue. And the woman said, oh, because all these people keep walking through my room and they all head for the same corner. And she's like, they're spirits. Like basically the woman was sitting in the bed and all these spirits are walking through the room. Not, I make this hospital sound like a death trap, but I don't know how many, maybe three or four spirits. And the nurse was like, oh, that's crazy. Because right outside that corner is the stairway to the morgue. And then the woman said, do you have a gentleman? He's like 45 and he's sort of still alive, but not really. He came in for a heart thing. Like, is that, and the nurse, you know, she couldn't divulge personal details, but she said, there is actually someone who's fighting for his life right now. He's in a coma and he came in, he's young, he's 45 and he had a heart attack, a massive heart attack. And the woman was like, well, he's sitting in a chair. He's over there, just sitting there. And the nurse was like, what? Oh my gosh. And the woman just said, he's ready. And I think he's going to choose to go to the stairway down to the morgue. And later that day, that gentleman did die. And I just thought, you know, the nurse was like, what? I don't even know what you're talking about. But with all everything that was happening and how the woman was describing the people who were walking through her room when she hadn't left the room because she's a patient, she was exactly describing the people who had passed away in the hospital in the 2 days that she was there. And so I think those things are all around us. I mean, for me, that's kind of exciting. I mean, it's terrifying if your lights are being turned off and you feel like someone's watching you. But so far with the ghost stories that I've heard, the interactions or the experiences have been pretty benign, you know, not like non-malevolent. Mm-hmm. And so I think clearly, I mean, I think you and I can both agree that there's something happening that is supernatural, that's like outside of what we consider quote unquote natural. It's probably really actually very, very natural. And we just don't have the capacity to, some people have the capacity to sense it and see it. Yeah. And so I think that that knowledge, like carrying that knowledge, because here you are, right? You've had your experience. Like, do you consider it, is it a heavy burden to kind, or does it give you hope? Like, what's your takeaway?
Well, I definitely don't think of it as a burden. It does kind of give me some hope of, like, you know, being able to open ourselves up to assist other people if, you know, if there's any kind of struggle going into the afterlife. Because I really do believe that there might be like a final resting place. And I feel like the spirits that are still here on Earth, maybe it is unfinished business or there's something going on that's keeping them around. And so being able to have this superpower, right, is like, be able to assist if I can, or continue providing comfort for somebody if they are in like a weird limbo moment, you know, just like to give them that kind of, give them hope maybe that there's something going on or something that they can like still be connected to the living. just as we need in the live in as we live, like we need some sort of connection, we need some sort of community, and we need some sort of like genuine care to like feel taken care of. And so I'm sure that that's mostly why these spirits do reach out to people. Is like they're like, we're still here, we still want connection, and we're feeling lost. And so, you know, I feel like it's kind of our job of people who are sensitive to this is to kind of just like provide them with that little bit of, you know, relief. I don't know.
provide them with some care.
Yeah.
I'm going to end this week's episode with a quotation from Suzy Kassem from Rise Up and Salute the Sun. And I want you to think about it with respect to your dreams, to the messages you're getting every night, to the things that you're being shown, to the questions that are being raised. Every single time you dream, we do dream from 3 to 5 times a night. So that's plenty of time for us to pay attention and engage with what's being told to us. So from Suzy Kassem, I have been finding treasures in places I did not want to search. I've been hearing wisdom from tongues I did not want to listen. I've been finding beauty where I did not want to look. And I've learned so much from journeys I did not want to take. Forgive me, O gracious one, for I've been closing my ears and eyes for too long. I have learned that miracles are only called miracles because they are often witnessed by only those who can see through all of life's illusions. I am ready to see what really exists on the other side, what exists behind the blinds, and taste all the ugly fruit instead of all that looks right, plump, and ripe. And once you enter that realm of dreams, I have to tell you, sometimes you see things that you don't want to. Sometimes things that are revealed that we'd rather keep hidden. But I'm here to suggest that potentially those things are opportunities, ways that we can reconcile old hurts and traumas, or maybe just a glimpse into the future. And Elizabeth Corpion seems to have experienced just that. She had a vision on the edge of her liminal space. She had a vision of ghosts, potentially, or a vision of something yet to come. And I'd like to thank her for sharing that story with me this week. It was very vulnerable and really raises a lot of interesting and intriguing questions. So thanks, Elizabeth, for telling your story. And thank you so much for listening. And here's my one request. Be like Elizabeth. Go with the flow. Understand that there are mysteries out there. And yes, she did try to figure them out. She did try to wrestle with them. She's been shown a glimpse of the mystery, a glimpse of the potentiality out there, and she's rolling with it. So be like Elizabeth and roll with it and dream deep dreams full of messages and glimpses of the future every single night.